Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Before we jump into today's show, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsors, the folks over at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States and recently rolled out a new payrolling service. So for any people around the United States who might be impacted by the new independent contractor ruling, please do keep Markham Search in need in case you need them to payroll your previously independent contractors. So today we have with us on the show, John Livesay. John Livesay is known as the Pitch Whisperer and is a highly sought after keynote storytelling speaker and Forbes columnist. During his talks, he shares the life-changing lessons he's learned from his award-winning sales career at Condé Nast to help people become revenue rock stars by forming emotional connections with clients through stories. Livesay is also the host of the Successful Pitch podcast, which is heard in over 60 countries. His engaging and energetic TEDx talk, Be the Lifeguard of Your Own Life, has over 1 million views. And Livesay's popular topic on how to ask for what you want and get a yes has also made him a sought-after guest on dozens of broadcasting outlets, including Breakfast with Larry King. Thanks so much for joining us today, John. It's such a pleasure to have you back on the show again.
Jennifer, always great to talk to you.
Yeah, so tell me, I hear there's exciting news. Before we just went on air, you were telling me about your new book. Before we talk about being in the friend zone today, tell me a little bit about this new book you wrote.
Thank you. Yes, it's called Better Selling Through Storytelling, The Guide to Becoming a Revenue Rockstar. And you have to sell yourself to get hired or get promoted. So I'm especially excited to be on your show today to help people become better storytellers because that could really impact their career.
Yeah, I agree. Is whether you're looking for that raise or that promotion or just trying to land the job in the first place, I know I learned from you the first time that we had you on the show that storytelling is integral to being successful and getting the job and the money that you want.
Yes, because people remember good stories and they don't remember facts and figures. And that's the big shift in your mindset.
Yeah. So tell me, when did you discover this? How did you find out that storytelling was so important and that it was the crux of what had somebody be successful in business?
Well, when I first started my sales career, I was up in Silicon Valley selling multi-million dollar mainframe computers to big companies. And I was competing against IBM, which typically had a big hold on the whole entire industry was all IBM, all blue, they used to call it. And if you bought anything that wasn't IBM, which is what I was trying to get them to do, they would point the finger at the other vendor and say, oh, if that computer breaks, we're going to blame them. You could be fired for buying them. But if it breaks and it's all us, we'll take the heat. So there was that, they called it FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And I realized that people, even if you have the best product, less expensive, faster, there's a lot of psychological issues going on that prevent someone from taking a change. So that was my first insight to there's a lot of psychology going on here. I had to, facts and figures weren't gonna do it. And then I worked at an ad agency after that, creating commercials for movies coming out on DVD. And that's really where I honed my storytelling skills of how do you take a 2-hour movie and take it down to 30 seconds to get people intrigued enough to wanna go watch it again or for the first time. And then all that got combined when I was at Condé Nast selling media, realizing that whoever told the best story is who got the ads to run, not who had the most readers or any of that stuff.
So let's talk about this idea of storytelling and why it's important in the workplace. I think that I saw a statistic that said 61% of people say that they've been snubbed for a raise or award or promotion of some sort at the office. How do we present ourselves? How do you become a better storyteller so, as you say, you don't get stuck in the quote-unquote friend zone at work?
Well, part of the problem is if you're the kind of person that believes I'll just get promoted or get a raise based on nose for the grindstone, and my work will speak for itself. That just doesn't work anymore. You need to be telling stories, and you first need to understand the structure of what makes a good story, because a good story is memorable and pulls people in, and more importantly, people want to share that story with you, and that's what you need. You need to be able to tell a story of an obstacle you overcame and how the output that created for the company in such a way that your boss could tell your boss's boss's boss about that story, and it might even become part of the culture. And when you have a story that's got that kind of impact, then you will no longer be overlooked for a promotion or a big raise.
So how can you even tell if you're the person in the friend zone? What if you're kind of just merrily going along in your job and you may or may not even notice? How do you even figure out that you're in the friend zone to begin with?
Well, I think one of the warning signs is if you see important meetings happening and you're not invited. That, you know, it sounds obvious, but it happens. They're like, oh, we only really need, you know, executives at this level, or we don't need all those people. Let's just, you know, we're automatically seeing who we want to send to leadership training even, right? Oh, we only have so much money and we're sending a few of our key people to get some leadership training and you're not one of them. So that's a big one. And not getting invited to meetings. And of course, you know, not getting that promotion and somebody from outside your company comes in. And the real kick in the face, kick in the gut, is when you have to train your boss and you didn't get the promotion. That's when you know you're not, there's something wrong.
So is it at that point, do you just cut your ties and leave, or do you actually dig in and speak up for yourself?
I think that's really where you have to dig in. One of the things, if you haven't done it already, that I really encourage people to do is don't wait for those annual reviews to have conversations with your manager about your career aspirations. So if you shift yourself from thinking, oh, I'm uncomfortable selling myself, I don't want to be seen as pushy or needy even, but start to shift that mindset from somebody who's selling and pushing to someone who's a storyteller and pulling people in. And there's something called future pacing that I work with sales teams on, which is you start to imagine it's a year from now and what would have to happen for you to feel really happy with the results. And when people are interviewing me to hire me as a speaker for their annual sales meetings, and it's usually between me and two other speakers, I will ask them that question. What would have to happen a week after the event for you to feel really happy? And then 30 days after, what would it look like if we were to exceed some expectations here? And they start thinking about that. And they said, well, people would reference what you said 2 or 3 days later, or the whole rest of the summit, or they would actually start, you know, implementing your skills on storytelling, and the sales will start to go up. So you can do the same thing with your boss when it's not the annual review and just say, you know, let's have a chat, imagining that it's 2 to 3 years from now. What would it look like? What would have to happen between now and then for me to get promoted? And then you and your boss collaborate and have almost the concept of being co-pilots of your career. So you're not trying to do it by yourself. And your boss says, well, I'd need you to start taking more initiative. I'd need you to take this class. I'd need you to have this new skill. And then you can almost, you know, craft a little course and get some agreement of, if I do these three things in the next year, then I will be seriously considered for this. And you're when you create it together, as opposed to you just imagining what they want, it really makes a difference.
Yeah, I can imagine that. It's funny that you bring that up too, because there was a great story I read today on LinkedIn that CEO I'm connected with, Nick Sakdeva, shared about kind of our value and our worth and understanding when it's time to walk away. Do you mind if I share the story with you? Because I know you're a story guy,
please.
So I figured you would enjoy it.
I would love to hear a story, yes.
So Nick shares, a father before he dies says to his son, this is a watch that your grandfather gave to me, and it's more than 200 years old. But before I give it to you, I want you to go to the watch stop on the first street and tell him that I want to sell it and see how much he offers you. So the son goes down the street, he talks to the owner of the watch store, and he comes back to his father and he says, father, the watchmaker offered me $5 because it's old. The father says, great. Thank you so much. I want you now to go down the street to the coffee shop, the one just next to the watch shop, and I want you to ask the coffee shop owner how much he's willing to pay you for the watch. So the son is kind of misunderstanding this and like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to do what my dad says. So he walks down and he asks coffee shop owner, and the coffee shop owner kind of gives a little giggle and says, well, I guess I'll give you $5 for it. And he goes back to his dad and he says, okay, dad, well, the coffee shop owner also offered $5 for it. And so he says, okay, now I want you to go to the museum in town and I want you to show the museum in town that watch and then come back to me. So finally he goes into the museum in town. He shows the museum the watch and he says, dad, you'll never believe it. They offered me $1 million for this piece. And the father said, I wanted to let you know that the right place values you in the right way. Don't find yourself in the wrong place and get angry if you're not valued. Those that know their value are those who are appreciated. Don't stay in a place where nobody else sees your value.
Great story.
Isn't it? I thought you would appreciate it. It was so apropos that we were having you on the show today. And I saw that this morning and I was like, oh, that just ties in so perfectly about, you know, A, it's a great story, but B, it also ties into exactly what we're talking about, how to get out of the friend zone in any situation, whether we're talking personally or professionally. You know, it's important in either scenario.
Yes. Well, let's break down that story for your listeners so they can walk away from this episode becoming a better storyteller. Does that sound like a good idea?
I love that. What a brilliant idea.
So a good story, and I just did this when I was at the Coca-Cola CMO Summit, where they took us all to see the musical Hamilton. And then the next day I broke down what makes that musical great. So you can use this to anything, a movie you see, a musical, a story you just heard, and you can use this as your own personal checklist. Am I telling stories that have all four elements? So the four elements are exposition, where you literally paint the picture, describe how long ago it is, who, what, where, when. Then you describe a problem. Then there's a solution. And the secret sauce, Jennifer, to a really great story is the resolution. Mm-hmm. What is life like after this solution has happened? And most stories don't have that. It's like, oh, they lived happily ever after. But if the story has a moral or a little update, you know, sometimes you'll see a movie, they're like 3 years later. And we're like, we can't wait to see what happened, right? So the exposition here is, you know, the father's talking to the son. We know that the watch is 200 years old. And, you know, he's been sent on a journey. The problem is he hopes his watch is valuable, but he's getting $5 from, you know, two places. And then the solution is he gets to the right place who wants to give him $1 million instead of five. And the resolution of that story is life-changing advice. Don't undervalue yourself. You're just in the wrong room. Get in the right room.
Yeah, I love that. Can you go through those four elements one more time? Because I feel like what you were just saying is so important that I, even though I've spoken with you before and been lucky enough to be on your podcast too, I feel like it's something that we all have this opportunity to ingrain in our lives, like breathing. And in doing so, it's just going to become all the more effortless to tell stories no matter where we are, what we're doing.
Yes, it's exposition. You paint the picture. Mm-hmm. There's a problem. There's a solution. And then a resolution. So I can give it, I can tell you what I told the people after we saw Hamilton.
Oh, please, I would love that.
Bring it back. All right, so in Hamilton, the exposition is, we know Hamilton is poor. We know he's an immigrant. And we also know something about his character from a song that he is never satisfied, which is sort of foreshadowing of his biggest strength, but also his biggest weakness. So that's the exposition. Then you get to the first problem that he has to overcome, which is asking a woman to marry him who comes from money. And the problem is he's got to convince her father to let him marry her, even though he's poor, which he does. And then the next problem is, and you can start to see this in every movie, the hero's problem gets bigger and bigger and bigger. He gets seduced and doesn't have the strength because he's never satisfied to say no and cheats on his wife. Then what happens after that is some political enemies blackmail him. And then his wife says, that's it, I'm writing you out of the narrative of my life. And as if that's all not bad enough, his son gets killed in a duel trying to defend his honor for cheating on his mom. And of course, he's just devastated, and so is his wife. Then the solution is he convinces her to forgive him. And of course, when she does, he breaks down in tears. and the audience is completely moved. And then he himself gets killed in a duel. And then the resolution of a musical and the story, which is so touching to me, is his wife writes herself back into the narrative of his life, dedicating the next 50 years of her life that she lived to making sure people knew who Hamilton was, and opens up the orphanage, the first one in New York. And she said, "I see my husband's face in those eyes of those children." And that's why Hamilton is so successful, because it's got all those elements of a story, and the resolution is just what really grabs you.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the same is true to your point about even interviewing. I'll never forget there was a woman who shared with me a story. To your point, a story. I have asked thousands of job seekers throughout my career, John, you know, tell me about a challenging person or a situation that you've dealt with in your life. And that is such a common question that it, at all levels, is asked in an interview. And I've gotten all the cheeky answers. Oh, this person was a real jerk and I left the company, or this happened. But this one woman told me this story. She said, "Jennifer, you know, I once had the CEO, and I went in and I interviewed with the CEO. And the minute I sat down with him, he was abrasive. He said, 'I'm going to yell at you, and I yell at all my assistants, and how are you going to handle it?'" Right? Totally that guy. And she says in her most calm voice, "Well, sir, what I'm going to do is the first time you yell at me, I'm going to stand up. I'm going to walk out of your office. I'm going to walk down the hallway. Then I'm going to come back. I'm going to sit back down, and I'm going to let you finish yelling at me." And the man's like, "Fine, you're hired." So sure enough, she starts, and about 2 to 3 weeks in, guess what happens? One day he starts yelling at her, and she calmly stands up, walks out of his office, walks down the hallway, comes and sits back down perfectly poised. And do you want to know what that man did when she sat back down? He laughed. He started laughing. And from that moment forward, they had an extraordinary relationship, because she had held a healthy boundary and interacted with him in a way that he had never been interacted with before. And I use that story when I'm teaching other job seekers, because so often we hear people tell these stories about the jerk boss or how hard the company was or the situation. But I think the most important element that we're leaving out when we're going after that job, that promotion, that raise, is the resolution part. I think people are so fixated on the victimization side of the story of Hamilton could have spent his whole life feeling sorry for himself and how horrible and hard things were. But, you know, he decided to turn things around, as could have his wife. You know, "Oh, my life is so hard. I lost a son and I lost a husband." But, you know, it's all about shifting the perspective and coming to the resolution. And I think that's honestly the point of life.
Yes, resilience, how fast we get back up. It's one of the key criteria as to what separates top performers from those who aren't hitting their numbers, is how fast you get back up after you've been knocked down. I can share another story about that if you'd like.
Oh, yeah. Let's make the show about storytelling. Why not?
When I gave my TEDx talk, the woman that spoke before me, her name is Bonnie St. John. She lost a part of her lower right leg when she was a child, and she wore a prosthetic leg, and went on to win some Paralympic downhill skiing medals. So she was standing on stage with her her prosthetic leg showing on a skirt and her Paralympic medals around her neck for downhill skiing. And she shared that in those races, they would take the average of your two times. So the first mountain, she skied down and she was the fastest. Then the second mountain was much icier and everybody was falling. And sure enough, she also fell. And she got up as fast as she could. And then when they combined the times, they said, "While you were the fastest to go down, you were not the fastest to get back up, so you came in second."
What?
So the question for all of us is, how fast do we get back up? We know we're going to get knocked down and rejected in life. How fast do we get back up is the real determination of who's the winner.
I'm just letting that sink in for a second, John. How do you do it, though? I mean, how do the Bonnies of the world, how did the person who fell down that icy hill that's just so precarious and you feel like, you know, every bone is broken and you're smashed and crushed and it's freezing, you're in these inhumane conditions, how do you freaking get yourself back up? I think that's the question a lot of our listeners are probably asking themselves right now. Yeah, well, it sounds good in theory, John.
Yes. Well, you know, it's practicing micro-resilience. So you have little moments when you can fall down and maybe not be so drastically impacted. And you say, oh, I'm getting back up. The key to this really, Jennifer, and I've seen this with some of the real estate companies I've spoken to, the top performers, when they get the no, they lose a listing or something falls out and changes their mind, they don't hold on to it. They move on to the next deal. They're resilient in the rejection. Whereas the other people say they let it go, but 2 weeks later, you can still hear them complaining about it. The one that got away, or I'm still mad about this. They're not in the moment. So that's the number one thing you can do, is to let go of what happened seconds ago and be in the moment. Yes, I fell down. Yes, that hurt. Yes, that stung that person said no. Or yes, I fell down on the ice. I'm not going to be stuck in my head going, oh, I can't believe I fell. I'm like, how fast can I get up? That's my only focus. How fast can I get up? And I can actually practice falling down before I go down in a competition. So I've got some history in my brain of, okay, I'm not devastated or shocked by this. I can get back up. I got laid off. How fast can I get back up?
It makes me think of that, the animal brain, you know, the monkey brain or whatever you would call it, of not surviving in that moment when we fall down, whether it's a precipice down a hill, you know, skiing, or if it's being laid off or not getting that promotion. In that moment, if you can flip your brain from, I'm not going to survive this, to, I may really hate this situation, but I'm going to survive this and find something better. It's all just in how I shake myself off.
Exactly. When I got laid off from Condé Nast back in 2008, someone said, oh, you know, take the rest of the year off. And I said, that doesn't feel right for me. And I had to, you know, start finding people who could introduce me to the Daily Beast, which is a digital platform that Tina Brown was launching. And I flew myself to New York on my own dime. I said I was coming there anyway to see some friends, which I didn't plan on, but I knew they wouldn't pay for me to be there. And I knew I had to be in person. So if you start thinking of yourself like a stock, you know, when we buy stock in any company, we think, well, they have a good product and they have a good work ethic. And, you know, I think that's going to go up in value. So if you're investing in yourself as a stock, especially when you've been knocked down, like, I know me, I'm going to bet on me. I'm going to pay some money, even though there's no money coming in at the moment, to do what I need to do to increase my odds of getting hired, then that is what can get you. And I ended up, you know, the resolution to that story is I had ended up getting the job at the Daily Beast.
Wow, that's incredible. Again, it goes back to tenacity. I was just talking to someone else earlier today about this idea of tenacity. You know, there's this word hustle, and I can't quite say I'm a fan of the word hustle because it seems like there's something untoward going on. But the word tenacious, it means that in the face of no agreement, in the face of hearing no, which actually, to divert for a moment here, there was a great exercise that somebody forced me to do in a transformational personal development class I did probably 10 years ago. And I remember I was at SFO Airport, John, and there were probably 100 of us in this program, and we're at a hotel. It was probably a Hilton hotel. And we were instructed, we are supposed to go out and get 3 no's from people about a program that we're putting together. And so I came up with this imaginary program that was going to cost people $3,000 to spend the weekend with me. And I remember going around and I went to the first person, and it took all of the courage and strength I had to pitch this fake program to somebody. And my intention was to get a no. And the person said, are you crazy? No, leave me alone, lady, right? And so like, you're just feeling like dejected. But then the goal is to go right to the second person and go approach the next person you see and say, hey, I had this great $3,000 program for a weekend. Would love for you to join me. And again, the second person completely blew me off and just kind of rolled their eyes at me. So I go up to the third guy in line at like a coffee shop in the hotel. And I'm like, you know, hi, I'm Jennifer. You know, I just launched this new program. It's $3,000 for a weekend. And, you know, I'm doing it in a month. And the guy said, great, I'd love to sign up. Where do I do it? And it taught me, though, that you just get this chance to break through. And I've heard in that same program, they suggested the same thing is true of dating, whether you're a male or female, just going out there and asking for those 3 no's, just saying, I want 3 women or 3 men to reject me, and not being afraid to get it. And then it puts you in this different position where, like you said, that fear of failure isn't incapacitating when you're confronted with your soulmate, your dream job, whatever it is that really makes you tick, right?
Well, you know, here's how I have learned to overcome my fear of a no or a rejection is I never take it personally. And more importantly, I never reject myself. So So when I was selling advertising and I'd go pitch Lexus or Guess Jeans, and sometimes they'd say yes, sometimes they'd say no. And I'd be like, oh, when they'd say no, maybe another salesperson could have gotten a yes. Or maybe they're right. Maybe another brand is better than what I'm selling. And I'm rejecting myself and what I'm selling. So when you stop doing that, and you just look at the no as no for now, not forever. And I'm not rejecting myself. So my tip for people to hit that reset button after you've gotten a no is call up someone you've sold something to that's happy.
Mm.
Like when I was talking to the Land Rover Jaguar sales team, I said, you know, the fear of rejection, no matter what luxury product or not, you're going to get rejected. So when you get the no, before the next person calls or walks into the dealership, call up a customer you sold a car to. It's great customer service. You're not calling to sell them anything, just calling to see how they're doing, what anything they need, what do they like most about the car. Get reminded of what that feels like to have a happy customer. And sometimes I might even give a referral, but more importantly, it hits the reset button for you, so you're not stuck in that I fell down, I can't get up fast enough resilience mode by using that technique.
I think that's smart. In all the years I've been doing, you know, some form of sales or another, I never thought of it that way, because you're automatically reinforcing the fact that you're not a complete failure, you're not a jerk. You know, you did satisfy one person, you know, whether it's, you know, it was a year ago or a week ago. It's the fact that, you know, celebrate your wins rather than beating yourself up over your failures or defeats.
Yes. And that's what I tell people is, you know, most of us are perfectionists. You know, when we get one little thing that's off and we pebble in our shoe, that's all we can talk about. We get one bad review of our book as opposed to hundreds and hundreds of loving it. So I tell people, let go of being a perfectionist, because it is exhausting. You know, you're climbing Mount Everest. You can look, you know, you're halfway up. You have a choice. You can look, say, look how much progress we've made. Or you can look up and go, oh my God, look how much further we have to go. So it's not enough to just tell people to stop doing something. You have to substitute something. Well, what should I do instead? So I said, let go of being a perfectionist and become what I call a progressionist, which is someone who celebrates their progress. And when you start celebrating your progress, it releases endorphins in your brain, and our brain starts craving, oh, that's why the Fitbit and all these video games work, because anytime you celebrate progress, your brain loves it and wants to do more. So if you can start doing that in your career, celebrating your progress, look how far I've come, not how much further I have to go, you're going to really re-energize yourself every day.
Yeah, it's so great that you brought that up, because yesterday there's a friend of mine and a mentor who actually has been on the show twice as well, Mary Jo Lurie, and she was talking about a concept, you know, from her program Activate Intention. And what I really loved that she shared is she said, you know, so often, how many of us as salespeople or people who run a company or are trying to achieve something, we kind of get these words intentions and goals collapsed. And what I loved that I learned from her yesterday was this idea that our goals are kind of like, okay, this thing that I want to accomplish, but then it's like, why? Why do we want to accomplish it? And when I get there, what does that feel like? And if we can bring that feelingness of like winning that medal, doing that TEDx talk, getting that promotion, you know, finding that date, getting that relationship you want. And if you're coming from an intention of joy, abundance, and gratitude every time you apply for a job or every time you fall down that hill or get a no on a potential date, then every time, if you're doing it from that intention, it completely shifts the journey that you're on to get there. And it'll also make it more easy and effortless.
Yes, because you're, again, you're future pacing. What do I want to feel? And not as attached to the outcome of having that have to happen in order to feel happy, grateful. I'm happy and grateful now. And my future intention of working here would be to exceed your expectations and go above and beyond the job descriptions. Asking those kinds of questions in an interview makes you irresistible.
I love that. And that's the thing, you know, the more irresistible we are, then we get to pick and choose what jobs we want. And we're no longer at the effect of who's doing the hiring.
Exactly. I tell people, when you're interviewing, I want you to think of yourself as a brand, interviewing another brand, and see if there's similarities between the brands. So if, for myself, my brand is integrity, passion, and joy. Those are my three descriptions of myself as a brand. And so if I'm looking to do anything, I'm like, do the people I work with or potentially work with have integrity? Okay, great. Are they passionate about what they're doing? Okay. And do they feel like it's a joyful place, or are they doing something in the world to bring joy to others? And if all three are right, can I pull the trigger because I know it's a fit?
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so brilliant. So, you know, tell me, John, were there any other tips or things that we didn't get a chance to chat about today about the friend zone, or any takeaways that you'd love our listeners to walk away from today's show with?
I think part of it is take the initiative to get out of the friend zone. Same thing in your personal life and in your career. Don't wait for someone to suddenly tell you, you know, oh, I see you in a different light. I never thought of you like that. I never thought of you as a leader. I never thought of you as somebody who is willing to move for a promotion. Let people know what your intentions and goals are by taking initiative. I think that's the big takeaway.
I think that's so important. And, you know, tell my listeners, John, because I want to definitely promote your book and make sure people know where they can find that in case somebody out there wants to improve on their selling skills or their storytelling skills. Tell people again the name of the book and where they can find it.
Sure. It's Better Selling Through Storytelling. And if anybody wants to text the word pitch, P-I-T-C-H, to 66866, I'll send them a free sneak peek of the book before they buy it, see if they like it or not.
I love that. That's a great idea. I love those kind of book look things where you can kind of get a sense, because some people you just vibe with the author right away. But I think people can also get a sense of that from listening to you on either your show or my show. You kind of get a sense of the energy in somebody's style and how they approach business. I love that. Well, thank you so much, John. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show again. And, you know I learned definitely so much from you today about storytelling and how to stay out of the friend zone. And I'm intending that all of our listeners out there got something of value as well. And if you missed any portion of today's show, you can find it later in the week on iTunes, along with all of our prior episodes, under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. You can also find it on the latalkradio.com webpage. If you go to Channel 1, Get Yourself the Job, you'll find at the bottom of the page an archive of today's show, as well as all other prior shows that we've done. And as I mentioned, I'm often sharing articles on LinkedIn and other relevant topics, so you can follow me under Jennifer Hill on LinkedIn, or you can also find me on Get Yourself the Job on our Facebook page as well. And we do have, you know, a lot of articles and different things that we share there too. So thank you so much again, John, for joining us today. And thank you so much to everybody who tuned in today. Really appreciate you. And without you, the show wouldn't be around. So thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.